Welcome to episode 124 of the Frank Reactions podcast on customer experience, which was one of the world's first customer experience podcasts and has been listed by NG Data as one of the top must-listen podcasts on customer experience. We're also a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network powered by ATB. I'm your host, Tema Frank, and I owe my regular listeners a huge apology. Before I get there, though, I just wanted to quickly let you know about an amazing-sounding conference being put on by the Rotary Club of Edmonton West and District 5370 this coming October 18th to 20th. The event's going to be open to the public, and it will feature one of my former guests, Jeff Polowick, who is the founder and former president of Driving Force, which is a transportation solutions company that started back in 1978 and has since grown to 28 locations all over Canada. Jeff has been recognized as one of Canada's top entrepreneurs. His company consistently hits the best employers rankings, and he appeared on episode 106 of Frank Reactions, talking about how the company that he founded 40 years ago grew in large part because he was always very focused on the employee experience, which, as he well knows, is essential to delivering consistently great customer experience. You can find that episode at frankreactions.com/106. And the conference itself is going to be open to the general public and will be attracting Rotarians from all over Western Canada and the world, which means, of course, that you'll be in a room with some of the kindest and most community-minded people around. You can learn more at conference 5370-2018.ca. And there's a video there that'll tell you more, and I will, of course, link to that site in the show notes. Now, let's get back to that apology. It's been a month since my last episode, and that one was behind schedule too. I have to confess, my life kind of hit a crescendo in April and early May. I was teaching two marketing communications courses at the University of Alberta, and of course, in April, not only were the students doing presentations and handing in project reports that needed grading, but they also had final exams, which I had to draft and later mark. And no, I don't expect any sympathy from any students who happen to be listening to this podcast. At the same time, I was preparing a few upcoming presentations, three of which I've given recently, and my husband and I were packing up to put pretty well everything we own into storage, where it will sit for the next 16 months as we go traveling around the world. On May 2nd, we hit the road, driving and cycling through the beautiful Okanagan in British Columbia, Canada, drinking a fair bit of excellent wine and eating superb food as we went. From there, we carried on to Vancouver, but I was only there for a couple of nights, and then turned around and hopped on two airplanes to attend the Customer Experience Professionals Association Insight Exchange in New Orleans. And then I stopped back in Edmonton for a couple of nights for a Senate meeting, and then flew out to Toronto for the Customer Service Professionals Network, CSPN, conference. And today's guest, Jessica Cryer, works for the CSPN, and she's going to be sharing a bit about her work with design thinking to improve customer experience. I'm now back in Vancouver for a couple of weeks, and over the next month and a half, I'll be spending more time in Edmonton, where we'll be celebrating my son's graduation before he heads off to teach in Sweden, and my daughter's admission to med school. Then we head to Las Vegas, where I'll be speaking at Bowl Expo, then Boulder, Colorado, where my husband's the one giving a talk, then to Stockholm, Sweden, where I'll be checking out what customer experience is like in that part of the world, and then finally off to London, England, where we'll get to settle for 3 whole months. I'm really looking forward to connecting with the many customer experience professionals in England, some of whom I've actually already interviewed on this show, and many more of whom I hope to interview while I'm there, and also to connecting with the professional speaking community. Speaking of which, if you know anyone who's looking for a customer experience speaker who hasn't been heard recently in Europe, I will be available from mid-July to mid-October And I do give presentations in English and in French. If you know anyone who's interested, they can reach me, Tema, T-E-M as in marketing A, at frankreactions.com, or they can look for Tema Frank on LinkedIn, or visit the frankreactions.com website to find out more, or our Facebook page. All of this is to tell you that while I will be recording several really interesting interviews over the coming months, I probably won't be as reliable about getting them out bi-weekly as I really should be. And I'm a marketer. I know full well that reliability is a key element of building an audience. But unfortunately, I'm just not yet that skilled at recording and posting podcasts on the road. Perhaps by halfway through this year, I will be. Now on to today's interview with Jessica Cryer, the VP Business and Customer Strategy at CSPN. There was one point where the sound got cut off briefly, so I've cut out that blank space, but there will be a bit of an abruptness there. Talk to you briefly at the end of the episode. What got you interested in this whole field, Jessica?
That's a good question. So my career started a number of years back at Monitor Deloitte, where I was a management consultant focused primarily within the financial services industry. And I did a lot of work helping organizations optimize where they were today and to start building for the future. But where I found a gap in the work that I was doing was really bringing in that customer thinking perspective and point of view. And so after 7 years at Monitor Deloitte, I went to another firm called Idea Couture. And that my experience there really opened my eyes to how to start bringing in different elements into strategic planning when we start to look at customer experience strategy, customer service strategy, product innovation. And that was really where I got my feet wet with the whole concept of design thinking, customer journey mapping, and helping organizations build and grow for the future, but doing it from a customer-centric or customer point of view mindset.
Okay.
And when I had left Idea Couture, I came to CSPN where I am now.
When clients come to you, typically, what is it that's driven them to do that?
So our clients come to us for a number of reasons. I would say kind of one of the primary ones right now is that they know they need to evolve and grow, but they don't know how. Mm-hmm. And so that need to evolve and grow is coming from negative feedback from customers. Mm-hmm. They built a small voice of the customer program, or perhaps it's fairly robust, and they're finding out that customers aren't happy. They're not sure exactly what the root cause of the problem is, and they're not sure what to do about it. And so they come to us looking for ways to help them identify what that root cause problem is and how do we strategically come up with opportunities that are not only beneficial to the organization, but are what customers truly want.
So when a client comes to you in that sort of condition, at what stage do you introduce the concept of design thinking and how do you introduce that?
That's a good question. I think before we kind of even jump into that, a lot of the times clients don't ask for design thinking because they're not sure what it is exactly.
Yeah.
So often it's a conversation that we start early. And as we get into it, and really design thinking is about, it's leveraging an innovative problem-solving model. And it's bringing that mindset of human-centered innovation for product and service development. And I think one of the best definitions that I heard around design thinking was that it's that connection between creativity and innovation. And so kind of to backpedal and answer your question there is, so typically the conversation starts with, we know that we need a new digital strategy for our customers because customer preferences are evolving. That's not new to anyone. People prefer interacting with us through different channels. Mm-hmm. What do we do about it? What's the so what behind it? And this whole notion of design thinking and customer experience and other buzzwords like customer journey mapping all come into play when we come up with what is a framework we want to use to solve this problem.
Okay.
And how do we want to start with a customer-centric approach and go through kind of an agile development cycle to come up with a product or solution that we can put in market that's meeting the needs of customers, but do it in a way that's efficient and effective.
When you say do it in an agile way, I mean, we hear terms like this thrown around, agile, design thinking, lean, blah, blah, blah. in a practical sense, can you give an example? Walk me through how you would have done that for a client and what the results were.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll give you an example from a utilities provider that we've worked, that we're working with still and have done a lot of work with them recently, is they came to us and they had very limited documented customer feedback. And anecdotally, they heard that the experience wasn't great. So they were getting, their CSRs were kind of collecting this and it was all hearsay. And when they came to us, they said, we're not sure, A, what this means, and B, what to do about it. And so we started to go through the process of, okay, let's define what the problem is that we're trying to solve. And so that's really the first step in employing a design thinking methodology is, what is that customer-centric challenge that has been put out there that we need to solve? So we went through a process of defining that right now we're looking at the end-to-end customer experience from the moment that they've signed up with this utility provider to the date service is delivered and installed, and then ongoing what that management looks like for the customer. And so a lot of thought went into defining what that challenge is. From there, we went into the observation stage, and we said, the goal or the impetus of this is how do we let customers guide what our decisions are going to be? And so this is all about what is the data that we can collect from customers to help us better understand them. And so whether it's going out into field and talking to customers, conducting focus groups with customers, doing surveys, having customers do journaling activities, so we can understand kind of at a very granular, detailed level what it is the experience feels like from their point of view.
Yeah.
Once we've collected all those observations, and this is kind of a play on words here, it's collecting the observations and translating those into insights. And that's where that third element of the design thinking framework comes in, is the understanding. Mm-hmm. How do we take what we heard and drive a clear insight out of it that we can then think about how we want to action?
Okay.
And so once we've kind of set the stage going through these three phases, we got into the envision phase or the ideate phase. And that's where you start to also leverage tools like customer journey mapping, which allows you to visually see what the experience is, where the pain points exist in the customer experience, and how we can ideate and come up with ways to improve it and enhance it. And this is kind of the fun, innovative phase that I think everyone starts to think about when you think design thinking and where the sticky notes are all
exactly.
Over.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, exactly. And people are collaborating and talking, and it's, you start from everything. If kind of blue sky, if time and money and resources were no constraint, what could we do to, okay, let's start coming up with more kind of tactical, real things that we think that we can implement. And so we go through that ideate phase, and where the agile component comes in is really in that next one, which is a build and prototype. And so the whole kind of driving force behind design thinking is that you're not going to always get it 100% right the first time, but let's get something out there that's customer centric that will make a difference, and let's iterate and improve on that over time.
Now, how do you do that in a company like a regulated utility? Because are they not afraid of, you know, if we go public and then either we get a backlash or perhaps it's not within the regulations? How do you overcome those fears? I know in financial services, that's often a problem.
So no, that's a really good question. And one of the areas that we were looking at specifically, or one of the ideas that came through, was revamping the customer portal. And so right now it's a very kind of fragmented experience that customers have. Data's missing. The visualization isn't great. Mm-hmm. And while elements within that are regulated, there was opportunity to improve and enhance it. But of course, like every company, every large company, making changes can be difficult. And so what we did is we defined the visionary end state and worked backwards to say, what are the incremental things that we can do over time that will help us get towards there, knowing that at some point in time, we're going to flip the switch and completely redo this whole experience. But what we can do right now are these incremental improvements that will absolutely make a difference in the customer experience, a tangible difference in the customer experience.
Well, and sometimes incremental is actually a great way to go. Like if you're redesigning a website or something, if you totally change it, you have this period of disruption where people are used to using the old system.
Whereas if you're sort of gradually introducing new concepts, then you may be able to launch a little more easily because it's not as radical a change from what they're used to.
Exactly. People are scared of change. I think that's not new news to anybody. And how do you make that change easy? Even if you are changing to make it better, it still can be scary for a customer. And I think the interesting thing in when doing work with a utility provider, and specifically in this case, is that their customers are their customers not by choice, but they've been mandated to them as a utility provider. And so what the whole kind of guiding principle behind our experience redesign was that knowing that our customers don't want to interact with us, they just want to have their utilities delivered and have no issues with billing. When they do have to interact with us, how do we make it as seamless and frictionless as possible? And so everything from how do we simplify what the bill structure looks like, knowing that we have to meet regulations, because it is like exactly like you said, a highly regulated environment. Mm-hmm. What are kind of the smaller incremental things that we've discovered in the customer journey mapping where customers are saying, you know what, your bills are difficult, or why is it when I go to do an online payment, I can't use a credit card for recurring payments, but I can for a one-time payment? And it's addressing those kind of specific pain points that we knew we could enhance right away, but then also planning for what that ideal end state is going to look like.
When you're talking about something like a regulated utility that has a monopoly, what's their motivation for spending money on trying to make things better for the customer?
Where they're focusing and what I thought was so fantastic in how they're thinking is that, so this specific utility provider is a sub-metering company and they do have competition. So they go into condos and apartment buildings and they do the sub-metering for the entire building.
Okay.
And while the individual tenants there have no choice to determine who their sub-metering provider is.
Okay.
The condo owners do. And so what their focus was that they have customers and clients. So their clients would be the owners of the building and customers are the tenants that are there. And so the relationship and the service that they provide to their customers is, of course, going to escalate or permeate into the client relationship as well. And so while something is still regulated, there is a need to provide the right level of service. And I think this can go into a broader conversation similarly around government and the services that they provide.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw this whole move towards digitizing the customer experience for citizens. It's being driven by the federal government right now.
Yeah.
So we've done a lot of work with CRTC, for example, who's building out their digital strategy as well, with how do we start to break down kind of these traditional ways that we've communicated with customers or with citizens, and how do we provide them service that they would expect from us, knowing that they're also interacting with companies like Google and Facebook and Rogers and Telus and Bell and all these other organizations.
Right.
And so I don't think that this need for great service stops with corporations. I think it's absolutely something that's being looked at from both the public and private sector.
Mm-hmm. So in your experience, Jessica, what are the biggest barriers to implementing a design thinking approach?
I think the barriers, there's a couple that come to mind. Number one is getting people educated on the concept of what design thinking is and seeing the value in implementing and leveraging a framework that will ultimately come up with opportunities that are customer-centric. And I think at a notional level, people understand the value of it. But people who don't necessarily live and breathe this every day, it's really easy to look at a problem and say, you know what, from an organizational perspective, if we just did this, it would be a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we break down those barriers, if you will, to say, you know what, we need to also look at this from a customer-centric point of view. I think there is a happy medium where we don't want to deliver solutions that are only focused on what the customer wants, but also don't align to the organizational objectives or imperatives as well.
Yeah.
Or don't feasibly make sense for the organization to do. But how do we come to an agreement that we can absolutely look at it from both points of view? I think, so number one, the education piece is a big component of it. Tied to that too is being able to sell this upwards.
Right.
How do you communicate what the ROI is? And sometimes you can't put hard numbers to it. And so it's how do you communicate what that value is? And I think we can get to the level of detail when we start to business case some of the opportunities that will kind of manifest out of this to say, you know what, if we, by focusing on a digital experience, we're looking to eliminate call volumes, we're looking to eliminate wait times for this. You can see how you can start to drive value there. But when we talk about adding in kind of the bells and whistles around an experience that already isn't generating revenue.
One of the things that I've been looking at a lot lately and will be the subject of my next book, if I can find enough examples, is how organizations that weren't great on the customer experience have managed to turn that around. And so far, most of the examples that I found, either they were already good and just wanted to be great, or they had a new CEO who said this is important. What have you seen, or have you seen examples where it's in between, where it was somebody more junior who came to you for help, but they did manage to actually transform their organization?
I've seen examples, and I'm thinking back to my days at Idea Couture and the work that I've done here as well, where we've had people come in at more the senior manager, director level that have such a drive and passion for change. And they, while they haven't been able to fundamentally shift the entire organization, because I think for someone at that level within a business unit can be very difficult,
yeah,
they've been able to drive initiatives forward that have fundamentally changed the experiences for their customers or the organization's customers that interact with them at a specific point in time. And I think when you start looking at banks and large retail giant organizations, to have someone drive an initiative that can make a tangible difference, I think is phenomenal. It's no small feat by any means.
Yeah.
But exactly, Temma, what you had said is that so much of this shift change really does have to come from the top down. And I think one of the trends that I was looking at for 2018 was that CEOs need to put this first. They need to put the idea of customer experience first, because without their support and their rigor behind it, it's not going to happen.
Well, and what we've seen in the last couple of years is they claim to be putting it first, but the reality isn't behind it.
No, absolutely not. And I think so. And it's hard. I mean, now that I'm also running this company that I'm at CSPN that I'm working with now. And it's hard when you start to balance, I know this is what the customer wants, but this is what the numbers are saying.
Right.
And so it absolutely becomes a conflict there. But I think the reality is that there's so much competition out there. Unless you're making tangible changes that customers can relate to.
What is the most surprising thing that you've ever learned in the process of a design thinking implementation?
So one example was we were doing work for a large courier provider, one that many people, I'm sure, have used and used multiple times. And we took the opportunity and we went through the design thinking process and we did customer journey mapping. We identified the breakpoints and we started to ideate and come up with opportunities. And so the core consulting team did that. We brought in the client and it was a great working session. And we had built out 4 or 5 opportunity maps of what we strongly felt based on what we had heard from customers. So we conducted focus groups, we did surveys, and we did journaling exercise. So we took all the customer feedback, translated them to insights, and built out these opportunity maps. Mm-hmm. And then what we did with those is we went back to the customers and we ideated with them. And surprisingly enough, and we didn't go in with the maps that we had created. So we went in with a blank slate. Mm-hmm. We had positioning questions to help them think through some of the challenges and help them kind of start that ideation process.
Yeah.
But there was not one similar opportunity or idea that was the same from what our internal team had created to what the customer had come up with.
Wow.
Yeah. So that, and I think, and you know what? And I think what was so valuable in that is it really reconfirms the need to have customers, to bring customers along this entire journey with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we were a smart group of people and we genuinely felt that this is what would enhance the experience. And from our perspective too, as customers of this provider, what made logical sense to us. And when we went back to the people, they're like, no, it's actually not this element of it. Our major pain points were really here, and this is what would make it easier for us.
So in the end, did they convince you, or you were more convinced by what the customers had told you?
So what we ended up doing in the end is we took the best of both worlds and came up with an idea that incorporated both elements, and then went back again after that to do testing.
What advice would you offer a business that didn't have the budget to hire professionals? What advice would you offer them about how they could apply the concepts of design thinking to improve their customer experiences?
I would say it starts with education. And if you can't bring in people that can do it for you, then you can absolutely learn how to do it. And I think there's so many great courses and resources out there that introduce people to these concepts. So much of what you learn is by understanding what other people have done, what has worked for them, what hasn't. Mm-hmm. And dedicate time to it as well. These things don't happen on their own or overnight, but having a dedicated team of people internally that can support you on these initiatives is critical.
Right. Thank you. Is there anything that I should have asked you and I haven't?
No, I think that was good.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for your time.
As Jessica said, there are plenty of online resources and offline courses about design thinking and customer experience. I'd really urge you to have a look at them. You might also want to check out an interview that I did a few years ago with user experience expert Sarah Messing about design thinking and user experience, as well as customer experience. That was back when we were transitioning the name of the website and the podcast. So you'll find that one at frankonlinemarketing.com/82_messing, that's MESING, _service_design. Yeah, I know it's kind of long and awkward, but it's worth it. If you're interested in following me on my journey over the next 16 months, I'd urge you to subscribe to this podcast, as I will be giving little updates, and or to the Frank Ideas newsletter, which you can sign up for over at frankreactions.com. Or you could also sign up just by sending an email to me saying that you'd like to be on the newsletter list. My email again is Tema, T-E-M-A, at frankreactions.com. You can also follow the adventures on the Frank Reactions Facebook page, on Twitter, or on Instagram. And I'm trying really, really hard to psych myself to start doing live streaming. So you might soon be able to watch some of that too. I've got some really interesting interviews coming up for you over the next few weeks, including a chat with a senior leader from Comcast about their efforts to transform from being a company with a reputation for, let's face it, really bad customer experience, to being on the other side of the rating scale. I've also lined up an interview with the general manager of the Marriott Hotel in New Orleans, where the CXPA held its Insight Exchange. He gave the closing keynote, and let me tell you, it was well worth sticking around for. To me, the best moment probably of the entire conference was at the very end of his speech when he said, "There's somebody special that I want you to meet before I finish up." And then he had his entire staff parade across the stage. Every single one of them. I really felt my spine tingling with that. It was such a beautiful gesture. And I have to say, they really were an amazing crew. The service from everybody I met there was friendly and helpful and attentive. Just one final word before I sign off today, and that's to remind you that you don't have to be an Albertan to enjoy the podcasts put out by my fellow podcasters in the Alberta Podcast Network. You can check out the most recent episodes at albertapodcastnetwork.com/blog. One that's on my list to have a listen to is the latest episode of A Branded World, in which Louisa Campos interviews David Smith of Unreasonable and Lauren Rubis of ATB about the intersection of transformation and branding. So that's all for today. I hope to be back for you in 2 weeks. But do subscribe to the podcast so you'll be sure not to miss an episode, no matter when I finally manage to get it out. Thanks for your patience with me, and I hope that you are having a wonderful spring. Bye.